In a recent interview with Pope Francis, he was asked by a Swiss reporter his position on the ongoing war between Russia and Ukraine, particularly regarding the debate over whether or not Ukraine should surrender to Russia. He emphasized the need for negotiations and referred to the courage of waving the white flag, which has brought many international reactions and raised questions regarding the role of the Vatican in international conflicts. This brings us to our own questions of how we got here and where we may be heading next. From Seton Hall University, this is Global Current. I'm your host, Trisha Ballion. With me today are two fellow Seton Hall students. Covering the domestic situation today is our analyst, Jasmine DeLeon. Hi, Jasmine.
Hi, Trisha. It's good to be back.
Good to have you back, too. And focusing on the international aspect today is Adriana Donis. Hi, Adriana.
Hi, Trish.
All right, so before we get too deep into our conversation today, I want to turn to you, Jasmine, just to go over some background information for our listeners to kind of contextualize what we're talking about and the conversations going forward. So could you just provide us with some more background regarding the interview itself with Pope Francis and what his response was within that context?
Pope Francis was interviewed in February by a Swiss television channel, and he was asked if he believed that in Ukraine there was the need to, this is what the reporter said, quote, surrender the white flag, end quote, or if it would legitimize actions of Russia. And he responded that it is one interpretation that negotiating would encourage the aggressor, but he believes, quote, that the strongest is the one who sees the situation, thinks of the people, and has the courage of the white flag and to negotiate, end quote. So he said that negotiation is never a surrender and that negotiation is courageous. But he also says that, quote, when you see that you are defeated, that things are not going well, you have the courage to negotiate. So that's drawn a lot of controversy.
Mm-hmm. And so why do you think there's been so much confusion and backlash over this? What's kind of been the root cause of that?
I think comparing waving a white flag to negotiate can be confusing because waving a white flag is usually associated with surrender. And to clarify, that very shortly after this interview was released, the Vatican spokesperson said that the Pope meant, with his statement about waving the white flag, ceasefire and negotiation, not surrender.
Mm-hmm. And so what else have we heard from the Vatican regarding this comment? Like, what have they said in regards to that?
The Vatican Secretary of State said that the Vatican was pressing for a ceasefire and a diplomatic solution, and Cardinal Parolin said, quote, first of all, it should be the aggressors who stop firing, end quote, so both sides can come to the negotiating table.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And so what has Pope Francis said in the past regarding Russia and Ukraine? What's been kind of the historical stance of the Vatican on this topic?
So for context, the war started in February 2022. In March 2022, Pope Francis, during two of his Sunday blessings, said that it was not a strategic military operation, as Russia had called it, but a war, and he pleaded for hostilities to stop. He asked people to stop this massacre, and he said that the killing of children and unarmed citizens was barbaric and had no valid strategic reason. And he also called Mariupol a martyred city and appealed for secure humanitarian corridors to allow residents to leave. I think that in a lot of these statements at the time, he did not explicitly name Russia as the aggressor to keep the Vatican's traditional neutrality, so that might put him in a position to broker for a ceasefire or peace. But eventually he did condemn Russia and compared Russia's behavior to massacres under Stalin and called attention to the plight of Ukrainians.
Mm-hmm. Did we see anything else as far as, like, practical shows of support outside of just, like, statements and, you know, inclusions in the prayer? Were there any, like, moves that the Vatican made or the Pope made at this time, like, historically looking at the conflict?
Yeah, so in April of 2023, Pope Francis visited Budapest, Hungary, and he said that he was working on a secret mission with the Prime Minister Viktor Orbán of Hungary and the representative of the Russian Orthodox Church in Budapest, Metropolitan Hilarion. So just for some context, Hungary is a member of the EU and NATO. The prime minister at the time did not send military aid to Ukraine and did not impose international sanctions against Russia. And Pope Francis's visit, I'd say that there were two main messages. One was he urged Christians and the prime minister to welcome foreigners and open doors, going back to the many refugees coming from Ukraine. And then he also greeted some of those refugees from Ukraine and then met with Metropolitan Hilarion privately. So this was both a diplomatic mission and also a call to, with his soft power, for peace and support for the plight of the Ukrainian people.
Mm-hmm. So definitely seen quite a bit of statements, practical visits as well, regarding this whole conflict. So I want to ask you, Adriana, if you have anything you want to chime in on regarding the Pope's solidarity that we've seen as far as Ukraine goes, like the neutrality of the Vatican.
In terms of neutrality, I have seen that the Pope likes to provide statements to ease the people's mind, not necessarily within Ukraine and Russia specifically, but just representing the Vatican and representing the role as the Catholic leader amongst all countries alike. And to that extent, when he goes to express neutrality, at times it could be a little bit more biased towards certain countries compared to others, or the inclusion of certain countries in his statement and exclusions mm-hmm. of countries in other statements. So when it comes to his solidarity, neutrality, at times he is a person and he is just providing his opinion, his statement, but he is also in that leadership role with the connections to 183 countries out of the 193 total, 60 additional territories. So to that extent, it's a little difficult.
Mm-hmm. No, I totally get what you're saying. It's definitely an interesting and unique position where he has to maintain this neutrality. Jasmine, you want to chime in on that?
Yeah, I think for me, my opinion is that it's not really a controversy, because the question if Pope Francis is telling Ukraine to surrender, he's not telling Ukraine to surrender. I think that his message of peace and doing anything to stop violence has been pretty consistent. But what I think is a more interesting question that we can take from the kind of attention this story has garnered from many people around the world is, like, what can the Holy See contribute to building and bringing that kind of peace? What we saw in Hungary is the Pope having diplomatic access to people like Metropolitan Hilarion, to people like the Prime Minister, that many statespeople and diplomats do not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's definitely, all this kind of goes to show the unique position of not only Pope Francis, but the Holy See as, like, a diplomatic entity, which I'm sure we'll get into later in our conversation. But, you know, on the note of people's responses and reactions and, like, why we care so much about this, I want to turn to you, Adriana, and just ask if, you know, you could cover any comments that have been made in response to the statements that the Pope made in the interview regarding Russia and Ukraine. Have they themselves, those two countries, released anything?
Lately, Ukraine's Prime Minister, Denis Shimbal, had asked the Pope to get children returned from Russia to Ukraine, but the Vatican statement Saturday made no mention of the request. I'm mentioning the request made last month in February of 2023. Ukraine's Foreign Minister, Dmytro Kuleba, he says, quote, "Our flag is a yellow and blue one." He wrote in English, referring to the Ukrainian national flag, in opposition to Pope Francis's statement for the white flag. He also pointed to allegations that former Pope, Pope Pius XXI, had failed to take action against Nazi tyranny in World War II. Just to exude, like, an example of the Pope's position within the countries on Earth, and to the extent of bringing that neutral role that there are kind of assigned to play, as well as Archbishop Sviatoslav Shevchuk of the Ukrainian Catholic Church. He commented that Ukraine is wounded but not conquered. Ukraine is exhausted, but it stands and will stand. The church's website quoted Shevchuk as saying in New York City, "Believe me, no one has any idea of surrendering." So just these comments that were passed on through by Ukraine, it was clearly showing that Ukraine does not have any plans of surrendering or allowing themselves to raise the white flag. Their people are not for it. Their leaders are not for it. They're definitely against that idea. So when Pope Francis came out with that statement regarding the white flag, it was extremely difficult for them to take in, and to an extent they condemned his ideas.
Mm-hmm. So we definitely saw that, at least from the Ukrainian perspective, they were taking that statement to mean more of surrendering as opposed to negotiation.
Yes.
Would be safe to say. And so what do we know about the attitudes of President Zelensky of Ukraine towards the Vatican and the Pope's position as an international leader? What do we know regarding that?
So President Zelensky had met with Pope Francis, and the conversation resulted in Zelensky opposing the way Pope Francis was going about representing the Catholic Church, implying he was not doing enough in regards to specifically his verbal statements. He also emphasized that if peace was what they were after, Ukraine would have negotiated by now. Ukraine should be the country, in Zelensky's point of view, to introduce peace to the conversation, as they were the ones who were attacked first. Mm-hmm. While Russia and Ukraine are not negotiating, as Ukraine continues to refuse, as they know Russia will not allow the request to be made without major losses. Not necessarily saying that Ukraine feels victimized, but more so because they were attacked first, they feel like they should be in control on whether or not they can negotiate peace.
Mm-hmm. And I guess it's, you know, from the Ukrainian standpoint, and, you know, given the history of, you know, Russia and Ukraine and the Soviet Union, it's definitely understandable to think that, you know, that negotiation wouldn't come without severe consequences to Ukraine, most likely. Would you like to chime in on that, Jasmine?
Yeah, I thought it was really interesting that the Ukrainian foreign minister, but also the German foreign minister, they made similar statements in addition to everything Adriana said about how the Pope should visit Ukraine, see the damage being wrought by Moscow, and also it could be a show of support. This is what the Ukrainian foreign minister said for, quote, more than 1 million Ukrainian Catholics, more than 5 million Greek Catholics, all Christians and all Ukrainians, end quote. So I think that while they are clearly sending a message that they're not going to surrender, they're open to the idea of the Pope stepping in the way that he can in his position and his spheres of influence by possibly visiting Ukraine. Maybe that's something we'll see mm-hmm. in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely something that wouldn't be, you know, out of the realm of possibility. And you mentioning the German foreign minister leads me really well into this next point that I wanted to address to you, Adriana. Have there been other remarks from other world leaders regarding this interview? Like, what have we seen from people other than Russia and Ukraine, who are, of course, immediately privy to this?
Definitely. There have been multiple foreign ministers. There have been ones in Germany, as Jasmine had mentioned. Her name is Annalena Baerbock, who supports Ukraine. She's mentioned in previous statements. She says, quote, when she talks to children in Ukraine who are affected by the war, she asks herself, where is the Pope? End quote. So the Pope makes claims from afar. He's hoping and praying for peace and pressing for peace talks or negotiations in order to stop the killings. But so far, that's all he's really done, only ever given out verbal statements. He hasn't made any efforts or any visible efforts to citizens that he is like planning on going visiting Ukraine or Russia. He's also putting Ukraine in a harder spot, where he's implying that Ukraine needs to initiate the talks already. Adding that type of additional pressure as a neutral mediator, you don't necessarily need in this type of situation that's already very hostile. And as previously mentioned, Zelensky continues to refuse to put up with the talks, as he feels the country would be lost and it wouldn't result in saving lives, which is the immediate effort that we all need to pay attention to.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
And even like the average citizen, many Catholics around the world were worried and angry at Pope Francis's statement, claiming it after multiple disappointing events towards Ukrainian Catholics during years of his reign. I would believe it is important to mention a lot of the political leaders that were mentioned throughout happened to be in some way connected or related to the Catholic Church, whether it is part of their faith or it's something that they believe in terms of the efforts they have pulled or participated in.
Mm-hmm. You mean the spokespeople or the diplomats?
I know that the German foreign minister, Annalena Baerbock, is a Catholic. And I believe the Polish foreign minister, Poland does have very good relationships with Ukraine. They also claimed that they were Catholic and they support Ukraine in its efforts as well currently.
Mm-hmm. So we're definitely seeing a lot of historical connection between faiths in different countries, which brings me up to my next topic that I wanted to address to you, Jasmine, regarding how does religion have a role in warfare, particularly in the context of Russia and Ukraine?
I think that arguably you could go back as far as 1054, even farther than that, during the Great Schism. I'd say that in regards to the Great Schism, which was the split between the main faction of Christianity, the Roman Catholic and Eastern Orthodox churches, which today remain the two largest denominations of Christianity. That split is, if you trace it to today's discourse and conversation between Pope Francis with Patriarch Kirill of Moscow and the Russian Orthodox Church, you can see that dialogue is open. Before the war was making some progress in trying to unify and create more dialogue between these churches. So in 2016, Pope Francis and Patriarch Kirill made a joint declaration. I'd say Kirill today, though, is a very controversial figure. He supported Putin's campaign. He blesses Russian soldiers and says that the war is supported by God. So I think understanding some of that history, understanding that not only are key players politicians and people that have the ability to wage war, but they're religious leaders around the world, the patriarch blessing this conflict, the Pope condemning it. And I think that the church has a pathway to dialogue that other states do not.
Mm-hmm. And so that just kind of goes to show how religion can definitely be intrinsically entwined in war, as you have these different leaders who, you know, might choose to bless something or not, can definitely be a statement when it comes to the significance of religion in different countries and how that kind of interacts with warfare.
Yeah, for sure. On June 29th, the Pope sent a mission to Ukraine and Russia to go to both countries, and said it was basically an attempt to try and find a way toward peace. So I'd say that, yeah, it's a very unique position. Mm-hmm. And it's not just in having the ability to influence conversations around the world about it, but I think that they're directly involved in the conversations that have to do with key actors that can end this war.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And so you already kind of got into this regarding the pathways to dialogue and the, you know, unique positions the church has in terms of peace. What other unique powers does the Holy See have regarding conflict as opposed to, like, traditional state actors?
I'd say that an interesting event that happened in 2022 in Kazakhstan was the 7th Congress of Leaders of World and Traditional Religions. This was a meeting that brought together Christians, Jews, Muslims, Buddhists, Hindus, and other faiths. Kirill was supposed to attend, and he pulled out. And when Francis was at this conference, he made a lot of statements about how God is peace and he guides us on the way to peace, never of war. And he was basically trying to create a call for dialogue, negotiations. And he also said earlier that year that Kirill could not be Russian President Vladimir Putin's, quote, altar boy, and that he told the entire conference, quote, the sacred must never be a prop for power, nor power a prop for the sacred, end quote. So I would say that the Holy See has the ability to unite different faiths toward a message of peace, mm-hmm. and that the Holy See's ability to conduct, for example, ecumenical dialogue, that was really hurt during this war, and that dialogue is strained, which I think is what makes it more difficult for the Pope and a religious leader like Kirill to find a way to negotiate, find a way to create a common ground when that dialogue has been really strained.
Mm-hmm. And so would you say that the war in Ukraine has definitely had an impact on the relationship between the Holy See and the churches within both Russia and Ukraine?
Definitely.
Mm-hmm. And so I want to turn this back to you, Adriana, just to go over a little bit more. What is the international role of the Catholic Church and the Pope itself? Can you explain to us kind of what that means, why it's significant?
So the Catholic Church has an extremely unique role in basically all the countries. The Pope himself hand selects every bishop that is in the 183 countries that has a significant Catholic population around the world, and therefore has connections with each of those countries and in some way involvement in their domestic and international affairs.
And so how has the Pope been involved with contemporary international conflicts, and what's been the general attitudes towards that? I know this is definitely a conversation that's highlighted maybe some reservations, some questions regarding, you know, what the Pope is doing internationally and kind of the role of the Holy See is coming into question. Can you kind of shed some light on how they've been involved with that and that whole discussion?
So Ukrainian Foreign Minister Kuleba had a lot to say about this. He mentions that the Vatican didn't do enough, specifically in the past in World War II in Nazi Germany. As previously mentioned, Pope Pius XXI did not do anything during the Holocaust. And Kuleba sees Pope Francis attempting to do something similar this time around with the Russian-Ukraine war, and especially at the mention of the white flag. Mm-hmm. So the Pope has such a far reach and yet does not always do the most with the amount of power that usually the Pope possesses. Kuleba also asked, I believe as Jasmine mentioned, he hopes the Pope comes to visit and support the 1 million Roman Catholics, the 5 million Greek Catholics, and Christians and all Ukrainians in Ukraine currently. Pope Francis puts his time and effort working as a neutral mediator between these states, but it has majorly resulted in unequal support. As mentioned in an AP News article, quote, Pope Francis has repeatedly expressed solidarity with the martyred Ukrainian people, but refused to call out Russia or President Vladimir Putin by name. He has seemingly expressed understanding for the invasion Putin ordered by saying NATO was barking at Russia's door by expanding east, but then earned a formal protest from Moscow when he blamed most of the cruelty on Chechens and other minorities, end quote.
Mm-hmm. So there's definitely quite a bit of controversy surrounding how you're able to maintain neutrality during a time of war. When, you know, most of the international stage, she's one is an aggressor and one is a victim. There's definitely a contention there. Do you have anything you want to add on to that, Jasmine, in regards to the international role of the church and how that's been kind of received by the public?
I think an interesting way to approach this story is to ask ourselves why people care so much about what the Pope says and about what he does. And I think that the answer ultimately is regarding just soft power. I think the Catholic Church is the largest single religious institution in the world, has the Holy See has diplomatic relations with over 180 states and 30 intergovernmental organizations. So I think that the size of the church, its place as a transnational organization, and it has, you know, it's a sovereign diplomatic actor that is also creating a developed body of social thought. So I'd say that it's what we're seeing is an exercise of soft power, but soft power also has its limitations.
Mm-hmm. Would you like to respond to that, Adriana?
I definitely agree to Jasmine's point, because he also plays a role legally in UN processes as a diplomatic legal player. It definitely does tie into his soft power, and like that connection is so expansive with so many. He has connections religiously with 1/5 of Earth's human population. And he's also connected, as Jasmine mentioned, with as a permanent non-member in the UN. So the Holy See is considered a permanent observer member to the United Nations, and they do have influence in those talks as well. But I would like to mention that people these days consider religion a little bit more on the back burner nowadays. It mentions, quote, at this point, 57% of all American adults say that religion can answer all or most of today's problems, while 28% say that religion is old-fashioned and out of date, end quote. So religion is becoming less and less relevant over time as generations come and go, and yet the Catholic Church still maintains the same amount of power within the political playing field as it did 2,000 years ago.
Mm-hmm. I think that religion, based on this conflict and also what we're seeing right now in the Middle East, is I think becoming even more and more relevant in terms of what needs to be, in terms of understanding the nuances and complexities of it, because the way that the Pope is interacting with Kirill and how he's almost sort of back-channeling with someone like Metropolitan Hilarion and sending delegations to Russia and Ukraine, there's a really, like, careful nuance and balance he has to strike as someone that's trying to maintain ecumenical relations but also at the same time end this war. So I would say that I think that religion is becoming more and more relevant, and when we look at so many of the conflicts that have started and erupted or restarted today, it's a big influence of that is faith.
Mm-hmm. And just to kind of wrap up, as we're unfortunately running out of time, both of y'all can, you know, respond to this question, but I just wanted y'all's opinions on, do you think that it's possible for the Pope to practically remain neutral on international conflicts as this war in Ukraine and Russia is persisting, as well as the genocide in Gaza that we're seeing continuing? Do you think it's possible for the Holy See to, you know, not only in words but in actions remain neutral? Or do we feel like, you know, conversations like this are going to erupt so far that they're going to have to take a different stance on things? And feel free, both of you, to respond to that.
I think it depends on what you mean by neutral. If neutrality means not taking one side, I'm not quite sure that he feels that there is one side to take. I think that, like, the side that he's on is of the people that are suffering from both conflicts and all the conflicts that are happening today. And he wrote in his autobiography that his vocation is, like, a priestly vocation. So he said, quote, that first of all, I'm a priest, I'm a shepherd, and shepherds must be among people, end quote. So I think that it's, what this tells us is that Pope Francis sees himself firstly as a priest, and as the Pope, he has to protect the unity of the Church and the dignity of all. So I think his neutrality is, there's no really neutrality in, like, trying to achieve that goal, but as a diplomatic actor who is trying to create a ceasefire and also trying to promote peace and end the violence all over Europe right now, I think that that's what I'm going to contribute to that.
Absolutely. Adriana?
I definitely agree. I definitely think that his main statements referred around the safety of the people and creating a ceasefire between the people in this war. And it definitely does not really play into him forcefully, like, stating that Ukraine has to surrender now. You have to raise the right flag. And when it comes to this question, which I think is a lovely question, I definitely think that remaining neutral is more so, like, it really depends. Mm-hmm. Because based on the additional statements have gone out in reaction to Pope Francis's statement, they tend to be seen only as sort of one-sided, when the Vatican Council, the spokesperson, later mentioned that they did not mean specifically surrendering. Mm-hmm. So he wanted negotiations talks to start specifically so ceasefire can be made. And when it comes to being neutral, oftentimes, because he's such a high leader, his word spread throughout so quickly and amongst so many, it can be twisted very easily as such regular news. So when it comes to remaining neutral, his opinions so far have been neutral in his statements towards the Russian-Ukraine war. It's more so how the people take it.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. As much as I'd love to continue off this conversation and dive into all the nuances, this is going to be all the time we have left for today. So this has been a really great discussion. Thank you both so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Joining me now to round out some other headlines this week is our news briefer, Juliana Mori. Hey, Juliana.
Hey, Trish.
So what headlines do you have for us this week?
Hong Kong passes new security law. Cricket Australia, Afghanistan tour canceled. Over 100 people kidnapped in Nigeria.
Lots of interesting stories to cover today. Let's start with the security law in Hong Kong.
On Tuesday, March 19th, Hong Kong's legislature passed a new security bill referred to as Article 23. Article 23 introduces 39 new national security crimes such as treason, espionage, unlawful handling of state secrets, and more. As a result, authorities have already jailed political opponents and civil society groups have been forced to disband.
I'm sure we'll be following these continuing implications. Tell me more about Cricket Australia.
Cricket Australia postponed their 2020 series against Afghanistan due to concerns over women's rights in the nation. Cricket Australia said that the Australian government advised them that women's rights were being deteriorated. The series was initially scheduled for August. This is now the third time Cricket Australia has declined to play Afghanistan since the Taliban took over in September of 2021.
I'm sure we're all intrigued about how this will impact international sports. And our last story?
On Monday, March 18th, residents and police in Kaduna, Nigeria, confirmed gunmen had kidnapped about 100 people over the previous weekend. There has been an increase in kidnappings by criminal gangs in Nigeria, making them a nearly daily occurrence. The kidnappers are known to force their victims into the bush for months while they await ransom payments.
Thank you very much for coming on, Juliana.
Thanks, Trish.
That is all the time we have for today. Be sure to follow The Global Current on Instagram and LinkedIn for updates on upcoming shows. This show would not have been possible without our dedicated crew, executive producer Bobby Kyle, associate producers Kasia Kostraba and Juliana Mori, technical producers Ashley Skladani and Amelia Vincichinsky, and of course your host, Trisha Ballion. The Global Current is brought to you by Seton Hall University. As always, keep it current with us and catch us on the waves every Sunday at 8:30 a.m. on 89.5 FM WSOU. Until next time, thanks, y'all.